Study this evening and to enjoy such a beautiful day. We've been blessed. And we're studying this series on marriage. Tonight we're looking at the true foundation. And this is in the series that is overall thinking about behind closed doors and looking at trying to get to the real marriage and encouraging all of us to try to be real in who we are, because none of us have perfect marriages or are perfect individuals. And this morning we talked about the person. Next week, we're going to talk about, Lord willing, honoring our marriages and how we need to honor marriage as an institution and how we need to honor our spouse and how we, what it means to honor or to value in a biblical perspective. And then this evening, we're talking about the true foundation. And we will look at a couple of passages of Scripture in a moment and get our study started. But before I do, I wanted to, by introductory matters, I wanted to share something that I shared with all the preachers and ministers who were there at PTP that came to this lecture, thinking about, because, you know, preachers often are thought of as they're supposed to have the perfect family, and they're supposed to be perfect. And the series was about, you know, behind closed doors, that a lot of preachers have problems, and all of us have a degree of problems, and some have great problems that even have led to divorce or to even maybe be unfaithful in their marriage or all kinds of problems. But I want you to know that the perfect preacher had been found. And I want to tell you about him. After 100 years, the perfect preacher had been found. He is the preacher who will please everyone. He preaches exactly 20 minutes and then he sits down. He condemns sin, but he never hurts anybody's feelings. He works from 8 in the morning till 10 at night, doing everything from preaching sermons to sweeping. He makes $400 per week, gives $100 to the church, drives a late model car, buys a lot of books, wears fine clothing, and has a nice family. He always stands ready to contribute to every other good cause. He's 36 years old, but he's been preaching for about 40 years. He's tall on the short side, heavy set in the thin sort of way, and he's very handsome. He also knows when somebody is sick and needs visitation, even when no one tells him. He has a burning desire to work with the youth, spends all his time with the senior citizens. He never forgets a name. He makes 15 calls a day on church members, spends all his time evangelizing non-members, and is always found in his study if he is needed. He loves to spend time with his family. His kids are always perfectly behaved. They never run when the other kids are doing something at church or running or anything. The kids, perfectly kids. His wife is always wearing a smile, never seen without a skirt, and friendly to all. And finally, he never misses an event or meeting at the church. He's always there. Unfortunately, the perfect preacher burned himself out, and he died at the age of 32. There's a lot of truth to the expectations that are often held for preachers. And a lot of those expectations are obviously unrealistic, as that list there was making jest of those things and making fun of that. But also, we often can go to the other extreme where we build up this persona that the preacher's family, that the elder's family or the deacon's family is a perfect family. And sometimes we even build this up in our own families. We think about, you know, a certain brother or sister in our family, or they're the perfect family. They're the white sheep in the family, while I'm the black sheep, we may think. And what we need to realize is, and what these series of lessons are trying to do, is recognize that behind closed doors, all of us have our challenges and our struggles. All of us are dealing with some of the same issues, and different stages in life are dealing with those things. And maybe older couples now can look back and see younger couples that are dealing with some of the things that they dealt with 20 or 30 years ago. And so we all have our challenges. And what this lesson tonight is about is that behind closed doors, we need to make sure we have a true foundation. This morning we suggested that in Genesis 2, 24 and 25, that therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. The man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. And we emphasize that our goal in marriage is to try to have this intimacy where there can be this one flesh, teamwork union, where we emphasize the individual abilities and talents, the uniquenesses of one another that we bring together to make a one flesh union so that we can be more together for Christ. And that there should be this intimacy, this nakedness, where the other person knows who we are, our failings, our strengths, our weaknesses, and yet they still love us. We can be open and be trusted that we will be loved. And so that's what God intended marriage to be. That's what we should be seeking. And then in Malachi chapter 2, the Bible says that Eli read for us earlier, it talks about this concept of your wife and the wife of your youth. And I really want to emphasize this middle sentence that I have underlined. What was the one God seeking? Why did God create marriage? Well, He created it for godly offspring. He wanted to have a place where children could be brought up to know and love the Lord. So He says, so guard yourselves in your spirit. Always be thinking about how you view and how you consider your marriage. You know, if you get down on your marriage, if you get down on your spouse, then you will look at your spouse through that lens, through that negative aspect. And once you get to thinking negatively, it just begins to pile up and you begin to see more and more negative qualities. And so we've got to guard ourselves, not just in our what we do with others and our flirtations or our involvement with other people, but He says you've got to guard yourself in your spirit, in your own mind, in your own heart, of how you're viewing your marriage and how you're viewing your spouse. So He says, guard yourselves in your spirit, your attitude, making sure that you're still emphasizing the importance of your marriage. You're still putting a priority on your marriage. And let none of you be faithless to the wife of your youth. So no matter how long we've been married, we still have to remember that that marriage needs maintenance. It needs maintenance. You know, we moved into a new house in the last year, last December. I was talking to someone the other day, and we were talking about things that we have to still work on or repair this or that. And some guy jokingly said to me, another construction guy, he said, "You mean you've got things you have to do still to a new house?" And isn't it amazing how even in a new house, there's still things that weren't right or you still have torn up and you got to fix or light bulbs that go out. There's constant maintenance beginning. You look at our church building here, and you think about it, it's only 10 years old. But you think about the maintenance that we've done and constantly done. We've painted walls and had to do a lot of work outside and all the stuff that's still going on constantly, even though it's new. Well, that's how it is with our marriage. You've got to start the maintenance right after you get married. You've got to keep it going. And if you've been married a long time, you still got to be doing maintenance, of making sure you're guarding yourself to stay intimate and stay close. And so this evening I want to think about six foundational things that we need to have honor-inspired communication about. We'll talk more about what it means to be honor-inspired next week, but what I want to basically emphasize is that we want to respect our spouse as we talk about these things. And communication is the lifeblood of a marriage. It's the lifeblood. It's how we are able to know what's going on in the spirit of the other person, in the mind of the other person. Proverbs chapter 18, the Bible speaks of this concept, and it says that the power of life and death are in the tongue. And then in Ephesians chapter 4, the Bible speaks about our tongues and how we use them. And in verse 29 it says, "Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, to whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. For let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. And be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you." Having these virtues is what honor-inspired communication is about. It's where you can talk about these things in a kind way, in a way that's tender-hearted, in a way that lets bitterness and wrath and anger go, and seeks to not speak corrupting words to one another. James chapter 3, verse 17 says that the wisdom that is from above, is humble and open to reason. So as you talk about, I'm going to give you six things that all marriages need to constantly have a dialogue about and work on as you progress. And at different stages of your life, you're going to talk about or deal with these things in different ways. But in some ways, you can't ever just solve these issues. You know, it's like your car and your engine. Your engine and your car. You can't ever just say, well, my engine's taken care of. For the life of your car, you've always got to be caring for the engine. You've got to be changing the oil. You've got to be servicing it. You've got to making sure that when that check engine light comes on, unless you're a Ketchum, you take it in and check and see what it is. My lights just stay on. I just leave them on until they burn out. But anyways, you know, you're supposed to be doing maintenance on those things. You can never just say, well, I had the oil changed when I first bought the car and never going to change the oil again. Now, these are issues in our life that we're going to always have to be dealing with. And let's notice these issues tonight. And a lot of these are things that we have other sermons on, and so we're just going to kind of, you know, bounce through them without getting bogged down in any of these things. First one is one that is intimate and one that we have to talk about in marriage, and one that in this occasion tonight we will not get into great detail with. But it is important to mention that when we think about a marriage relationship, when we think about what God would have it to be, we must realize that the sexual relationship is a mirror of the entire marital relationship. And oftentimes, it's the case that there's a correlation, that it is a mirror. And so if you look into your relationship, and if there's a problem, there's a problem in your intimacy, there's a problem in your closeness, there's a problem with, you know, finances, with the way you're talking, and there's a problem with your children and parenting and whatever other issues, that is going to be reflected, it's going to be seen in the sexual relationship. And if there's a problem in the sexual relationship, it's going to filter down and affect all these other areas too. And so there's a direct correlation from this relationship and the overall relationship. In other words, if your sexual life is going well, then it's not always the case, but it's a pretty good indicator that your marriage is going well. And you can almost always know that if a couple is having a very difficult marriage and they're on the brink of separation and divorce, that their sexual life is also very bad. And so it's a mirror of the entire relationship. In Hebrews chapter 13, the Bible speaks of this concept, and it says that we need to always consider this as a part of our marriage. And of course, 1 Corinthians 7 would say a lot about this, but verse 4 says, "Let marriage be held in honor among all. Let the marriage bed be undefiled or holy, for God will judge the sexually immoral and the adulterous." So it's something that's holy, that's honorable. And of course, we talked about Genesis 2, the one flesh union. We talked about that idea of not being ashamed. And in the Song of Solomon, it deals with this idea in great detail and about the love and the intimacy that they share and how God is not ashamed of this. We need to remember God created sex. You know, sex is not dirty. God created it. He created it as a way to pull us together, to draw us together, so that when, you know, everything else seems to be falling apart and we're almost aggravated to no end with one another, we realize that if we're committed, we have that pull, that natural attraction that has brought us together, that also helps bring us back together, that desire and that connection to realize that we have looked to that person to meet our needs, and we, in a marriage, we cannot go anywhere else. And so if we're going to continue to have that relationship, we've got to work it out. We've got to work things out, because there's a commitment, there's a pledge that's made on the wedding day that you'll give yourself to them and to them only. And so we could say a lot about that, but let me emphasize this, is that in your marriage, and as your life progresses through your marriage, that you always need to be willing to have respectful, serious dialogue about this topic. You know, it seems that even though couples might have had numerous years behind them, that this topic, this and death, are two things that we don't want to talk about. I can understand death a little bit, I guess. None of us like thinking about that, but most of us like to think about this. So we need to talk about it. We need to be willing to be open and talk about it. If we don't talk about it and communicate, then we often have misunderstandings, we have hurt feelings, and we often allow it to affect the rest of our relationship without being aware that the real root problem is this sexual relationship. Number two, another thing we need to talk about and we need to be willing to have is honored, inspired communication about love and appreciation. It seems that we can often feel awkward, it is, saying kind things to one another. You ever tried to do that game with your kids or do something with your kids where you have to make them say something nice to one another? For a while there, me and Amanda, we were really going to be good parents, and we were going to make our kids tell each other they loved each other every night before they went to bed. But you know what? When it gets to be about 11 o'clock, you just say, "Let's go to bed!" You know, you just, but it's hard to do sometimes to say nice things about one another, to say you love each other. And obviously, I'm kind of joking there about brothers and sisters, and we expect that out of kids, right? But what about in our couple, in our marriages? You know, do we find it easier to say negative things about our spouse, to say the nitpicking, critical things, or do we find it, you know, difficult to say things like, "You look pretty in that dress," or "I like your hair today," or "I appreciate what you're doing for us," or "I appreciate what you did for me today"? You see, we need to express love and appreciation. If you read through Song of Solomon, I know I'm referring to that book quite a bit, but if you read through Song of Solomon, it just gets overly redundant. The whole book is emphasizing this great magnitude of their love and this poetic expression of them extolling the virtue and the love of one another. How beautiful and how handsome and all these things. And we need to remember that there's a sense of where all of us need to be appreciated and want to be appreciated and want to have love expressed. You see, men need to hear that you need him, ladies, and that you believe in him, and that he has what it takes to meet all the challenges of his life and his day and to be the father or husband he needs to be. And ladies need to hear that they are lovely and valuable, and that you love them, and that they're the only one for you, and that you appreciate all they do for you. You see, we need to make sure that we communicate this message. And let me say, as I add one thought to that, that we need to make sure we express thanksgiving, to be thankful. That you know, we're not guaranteed that we're always going to have our spouse. And if you listen and talk to people that have lost their spouse, I know we have some here in the audience tonight, one of the things they always emphasize is that, you know, you realize how much you missed them, and you realize all that they did for them and what they meant for you. We need to be thankful that we have our spouse, that they're a gift from God. So express love and appreciation. Somehow that's something that we can put on the back burner, but we need to make sure that we talk about that we have honor and inspired communication about love and appreciation and what our spouse means to us. Number three, we need to talk about our work and our service. This is a big issue of conflict, and it's something that we need to be willing to discuss. Back in Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, we read that God made Eve a helper, a companion for Adam. And in Colossians 3, Paul is talking about the role of marriage, and he says, "Whatever you do," in verse 17, "in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord, and husbands, love your wives, and do not be harsh with them." So have an understanding spirit, giving grace to them, not being harsh. Then he says in verse 21, "Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged and bondservants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. What I want to emphasize about this point here is that we can do a lot more. Like I was saying this morning about what was said about Bob and Betty Brooks and how they were a team and they worked well together. We need to always talk about what we can do together as a couple. You know, we emphasize in marriage when we have that unity candle up there that there's two separate individual lights, and when they put them together, they shine brighter for Jesus. We need to work together. And if we're going to work together, if we're going to serve in the kingdom of Christ together, if we're going to raise children together, we've got to have serious conversations sometimes. For example, you know, men, we often need to ask the question, am I gone too much? Am I away too much? Or do I put too many burdens on you? Or am I, and this is tough on us men sometimes, am I emotionally present and invested when I'm home, you know, with the kids and with you? Or am I still emotionally, mentally at work and thinking about what else I've got to do? Do you feel like you're always in the background, never getting the encouragement or recognition that she might deserve? Or do you feel like I'm honest and open with you? And wives might need to ask some tough questions. You know, what can I do to support you? Or am I gone too much? Am I, you know, what am I doing that with my work and my service that may be causing problems or tension or conflict for our family? What are the biggest areas of stress, you know, for each spouse? What can we do to spend more time with our kids and maybe to intentionally train them? You know, when we think about this topic, this is one that we have to be respectful of one another on. That we have to talk about these things. We have to have honor inspired. This is a foundation of who we are. It's talking about our work and talking about our service. Number four, and this one kind of I decided to make this two separate, but they go right together. And that's money. You know, like in 93% of marriages that end in divorce, money is a significant cause in those marriages. Conflict over money. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, Jesus says that you cannot serve God and mammon. You cannot have two masters. For you will love the one and hate the other. Be faithful to one and be disloyal to the other. Now, Jesus is talking about God and money. But let me suggest to you that we could take Jesus' words and paraphrase them and apply them to marriage, and it could be this. You cannot love your spouse and money. You cannot love your spouse and money. In other words, if you're greedy, and if you're always putting money between you and your family, and you care more about money than you do your spouse or your family, it's going to come out. And y'all know, there's some people that are like that. Now, some of you may have some of those folks in your family or work with some of those people that they care more about money than they did their spouse, their family. And they had a lot of problems in their marriage and in their home. We need to understand that we got to have some honest conversations about money. In chapter, it should be verse 5, Hebrews 13, verse 5, right after talking about the marriage is honorable, and we need to keep ourselves pure. It says, keep your life free from the love of money. I don't think it's an accident that in verse 4 he says, marriage is to be kept honorable. And then verse 5 he says, keep your marriage, keep your life free from the love of money. We've got to keep ourselves free from the love of money. This is a big issue, like that motor that needs maintenance. I wish that you could get money matters settled. I guess a little bit they get settled. Hopefully, you know, as you retire, you kind of get, you're a little more secure after your kids get grown, and that's the way it works for a lot of people at least. But even then you still have issues with money, right? You may not be as stressed with it or might not have as much outgoing, but you still have a lot of stress with, you know, thinking about how you're going to spend your money in retirement and all those issues. And money is always stressful. It's always an issue that you've got to deal with, you've got to work on. And if you have a lot of money, then people are after you to try to give it and use it. And, all, you know, And if you don't have any money, then that's extremely stressful. And so there's all kinds of stress and tension. And you have two people in a marriage. And so you have often two people that are making money and two people that are spending money. So you have two people that can argue about money, right? And we've got to be willing. Got to be willing to talk about it. See, here's my point. Not to tell you how to deal with your money. That's another sermon. But what I'm saying is, if you don't talk honestly and openly and in a respectful and kind way to one another about money, it will ruin your marriage. I tell couples that are getting premarital counseling, and I have them do a budget, and we have them do some work on money, but I tell them that they're going to have to learn to deal with money because they're going to be dealing with it all the days of their life. And if they don't learn how to deal with it, it will eat their marriage up. And it will divide them. It will divide them. We've got to talk in a respectful and honest way about money. Number five, there's six of these. We've got to be willing, and even if your children are grown, this one applies to you. We've got to be able and willing to talk about parenting. And we talk about J.B. Phillips and his thought that a child's early conception of God is almost always connected with their father and mother. And therefore, a parental hangover is this idea that an adult's relationship with God will instinctively be viewed from how they saw their own parents. And so we need to consider, you know, what hangover is our kids going to have? And so we want to think about, you know, what emphasis am I going to give my children about what do they think about the church? What do they think about other people? What do they think about how to treat family? And obviously, it's not the case that all those things are projected and the influence that we want happens. But we need to realize as parents that we need to be intentional about these things. And we certainly don't want to give them a negative view, a bitterness toward the church, or bitterness toward God, or toward His Word. And that we're always modeling for them how we treat our spouse, how we treat one another. And so we need to think about our parenting. You know, Malachi says back in chapter 2, verse 14 and 15 there, that the goal of a marriage, why God created marriage and holy marriage, was for godly offspring. So we've got to be working on this. So parenting is something that you're always talking about. And the emphasis that I want to make is that you've got to talk about it in a way that respects one another. And so you're going to bring different, you know, maybe you have a passive parent, maybe you have a very strong or disciplinarian parent, and you got to work those things out and try to take the blessings of each. And you got to try to learn to work together and be respectful of one another. And even as your children grow, you've got to listen to the advice and the counsel of one another and try to make those decisions together. And so parenting is something that if you don't talk kindly to one another about, and if you don't talk about it, certainly don't get into a situation where you are doing things with this child or for this child in a deceiving way from your spouse. Your spouse doesn't know what you're doing. You're doing it in a way that's deceiving your spouse, in a way that is going against your spouse's will. It's going to cause a lot of problems. If you're going to be intimate and be naked and not ashamed, you've got to be willing to talk about, honestly and openly, parenting. We were on vacation. You know, when you go on vacation, sometimes you have these great ideas. When we went to Colorado and all that, you know, spending all this time together. And that was we had a great time in Colorado. But we also had some challenges with the children at times. You know, kids on vacation can seem like they're just wanting. And you got four different views of what they want to do. And sometimes when one child's not doing what they want to do, they're upset about it. And attitudes aren't always the best. And everybody gets a little tired and grumpy at times. So we had one night where we had a rough time. And we had a long, open discussion about it. And it was real good. And we decided that we needed help. So we bought the James Dobson's parental three books in one. It's about that thick. And we're going to try to read it. We've made it through some of it. And we still got a long ways to go. But You know, parenting is tough. It's tough, and it's something that we've got to always be trying to talk to one another about and be respectful of one another on. And then number six, lastly, I would say that if we're going to have the foundation principles of our marriage, these are foundational things we've got to talk about, is ultimately, we talked about, you know, being naked and not ashamed and accepting one another's failures and knowing one another, but yet still loving one another this morning. If we're going to do that, we've got to have forgiveness. I don't understand how a marriage can work without forgiveness. You know, there's a movement amongst secular people to in some ways do away with marriage or to put a timeline on marriage. I think there was like a law even introduced in Britain or France or somewhere where the marriage covenant was for 7 years. And you just signed up for 7 years, and at the end of that, you know, you could dissolve that union and go on and marry someone else, or just, it didn't have to have a messy divorce. It was just, no, we're in this for 7 years. That's certainly not what God intended, is it? But the only way that a true marriage can work and can stay close and intimate through the years is by having forgiveness. Because both partners are going to fail one another. Both partners are sinners. Both partners are sinners. And you're going to often be prideful. You're often going to be selfish. You're often going to say things you didn't really mean, or things that you meant to hurt at the time. And you're going to need forgiveness. Jesus talks about that in Matthew 6, 12 through 14, and Matthew 18, 15 through 35, in the parable of the unmerciful servant. And Paul in Ephesians chapter 4, I will read that passage, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31 through 32, speaks about this concept, and he says, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor, all these things be put away. Be kind to one another." And he says, "Forgive one another as God has forgiven you." We've got to be forgiven. Forgiveness is essential in a strong marriage. I think that's why a lot of the people in the world are just wanting to get involved in marriage and then be able to move on, because they don't really have the Christian concept of forgiveness. And without forgiveness, without realizing that forgiveness is a decision of the will that you choose to do, you choose to let the person go, then you're going to spend your life bitter. You know, it's interesting how many classic books there are that we really don't know what they're about today. They were famous years before, but the kids, Amanda, in their homeschool, might have been one of you, at some point we got free, I think, a set of Treasury of classic books. And they're children books. They're classic stories that were adapted for children, like in the 4th through 6th, 8th grade, something like that. So they're much shorter version. Well, the kids and Amanda have read the story of Moby Dick. And, of course, I've always heard the story of Moby Dick, but I don't guess in any literature class I've ever had to read it. Really didn't know much about it other than it was about a big whale. Well, anyways, I don't know if you know the story of Moby Dick or not, but the story is generally this, that there was a man who had lost his leg. And I didn't read it with them. They've told me about it, so hopefully I got the general version right. But he had lost his leg through the hands, through the whaling adventures of trying to kill Moby Dick. And he had a peg leg, and he was the captain of the ship, and he is bitter. And his whole goal in life is to find Moby Dick and kill him. And so the story is about them going back out and trying to find Moby Dick. And they find one whale, but it wasn't Moby Dick, and they kill that whale. But then finally they find Moby Dick. And the end of the book, not to spoil it, but it's been out for 150 years, so if you haven't read it by now, it's just too late. The end of the book is, they find Moby Dick, and they're fighting Moby Dick, and this captain's fighting Moby Dick, and he kills him, but he dies, and he goes down because of that fight. In other words, Moby Dick and the captain both go down. And you know, I was talking to the kids about it, and I was trying to emphasize, I think, the lesson that he was wanting to give there. And a lot of the other men on the ship, all but one died. And it seems that the point of that book, the lesson of that book, is that if you hold on to bitterness and you chase after revenge and hatred, it will take you down. And you might eventually get what you wanted. You might eventually get what you wanted. You might eventually kill the one you hated. But it will kill you in the process. And generally, you'll take a lot of other people out with you. And I told the kids, how much better off would it have been if when he would have lost his leg, he would have let it go and gone back home and married and had a happy family and lived with that disability instead of spending his life trying to find and kill the one who gave it and dying in the process. You see, there's a lot of marriages that they don't learn forgiveness and they kill one another in the process. So we've got these six things that we need to think about, that if we're going to have a strong marriage, we're going to be willing to talk about sex and expressing love and appreciation. We're going to be able to openly talk about our work and our service, our money, our parenting, and be willing to forgive. In closing, I would say that you can never minister to the deep hurts of others' marriages. You can never, you know, really help others and mentor others and be there for others and brightly radiate the glory of Christ and really reflect the glory of Christ until you're willing to deal with your own deep hurts and issues. Until you're willing to, you know, to really deal with these things that have affected you and your background, your experiences, and all that we talked about this morning. And then constantly work on your own marriage, you're not really going to be able to radiate the love of Christ and to be that example for other couples. If you're here this evening and you're not a child of God, we want to give you that opportunity. If you need to come back to the Lord, then please come as together we stand and sing.